Welcome to Voice Is, a podcast where we have conversations with people whose voices we love to delve into the good, the bad, and the messy of what makes your voice yours. I'm Casey Aaron Clark.
And I'm Julie Fogg. We're co-founders of Vital Voice Training, a voice, public speaking, and communication coaching company out to change the conversation about what your voice is supposed to sound like. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Season 4 of Voice Is. When I first moved back to San Francisco 5 years ago, suddenly it seemed like cannabis was everywhere. And now traveling across the country, I'm seeing the conversation get even bigger. And that's not even to mention the market for CBD that's in everything from face creams to seltzers. So what is it all about? Is this just another party drug, or is it something more foundational? There's so much to talk about when it comes to cannabis, aside from just its usage. The industry stands in an incredible position to right the harms from the war on drugs and bring money into Black communities, but it's running into all kinds of predictable obstacles. We've been wanting to have a conversation about all of this for a while, and when we met today's guest, we knew she was the one we wanted to have it with. Bringing her grace, kindness, and incredible breadth of knowledge to today's Voice Is, we welcome co-founder of Collective High, June Johnson.
June, hello. We're so excited for you to be here today.
Hi, I am thrilled to be here. So thank you so much for thinking of me and inviting me onto your podcast. This is really exciting for me.
Oh my gosh. Will you start by just introducing yourself to our audience and telling us in whatever terms feel right to answer this very broad question? Tell us a little bit about your journey. Tell us how you ended up doing what you're doing.
Let's see. I am a 38-year-old model, and I'm also co-founder of a cannabis event company. And I have a very meandering path to getting to where I am today, but I'm proud of the path that has taken me here up until this point. I started off in sales and marketing and typical things that you get ushered into. And it really just didn't suit me. It didn't drive any passion. And I was working for Liberty Mutual at the time. Not that there's anything wrong working within Liberty Mutual, but it just wasn't something that was sustaining my creativity. And I hopped around here and there, but what I fell in love with was fashion PR, which then led me to events. And events, I don't know why it took me so long to get to, but events just is something that I can see myself doing for the rest of my life. I love bringing really cool people together, featuring really cool brands or themes, and then creating that kind of awareness around it. And I also, in high school, I was the kid who was always throwing parties.
Yes.
And she chastised me once I got busted one time.
So you lived the teen movie thing that I always have felt was like fake. And maybe just because that was so not my experience in high school. That's amazing.
Yeah, I did. I threw parties. I went to a really amazing high school. It wasn't like clicky. People had their groups, but everyone could hang out. It wasn't like you showed up to a party and people were like, you can't be here or anything like that. So parties were a lot of fun. It just brought everyone together, different groups. And I do remember getting busted one time for a party I had thrown because something got knocked over and it was like my mom's antique something or other.
Straight out of a teen movie. Oh my God.
She was like, you better use this for good one day. Like this better be a job or something worthwhile. And so I was like, I am. I'm throwing events now that aren't in someone's home that didn't ask for them to be thrown. But no, with the cannabis side of things, the company is called Collective High, and we bring a level of education and I think a level of sophistication that I've seen or I've not seen rather in the cannabis industry. My first cannabis event was, how do I say this? I saw a woman walking by in a bikini that was like a marijuana bikini. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This cannot be what I just signed on to. What? It was just so surreal. I was like, they're really still doing this? Like, this is still a thing? So my business partner and I, Leah, we decided we know what we want to see in events. We haven't seen it. So how can we do that? And so that's kind of how Collective High started. And then with modeling, I did it when I was really young. I started when I was 12. And then my mom actually pulled me out because she said I was too kind and that the industry would eat me up. And she did not want to see that. And I didn't really care at the time. It's like, cool, whatever. Like, modeling wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I had to hold this like laptop for like 4 hours. Like, this sucks. I was like, what? I thought it was going to be something different. And so I didn't think anything of it until like right around college. One of my good friends, just a really smart, wonderful woman, started her own modeling agency because she wasn't seeing what she wanted by representation, which is pretty industrious to do while you're in college. And so she gathered all the friends and was like, hey, you got to be a model. I'm going to train you, but you got to be a model. And so I was like, okay, bet, I'll do it. And that's how I got back into it. But I come from a family of academics. And so modeling was like not something you aspire to do. If I had been a doctor, lawyer, everything great. But being a model is just like, maybe you do that in the summertime, and you definitely do it when you're a lot younger. So it's actually been a force of getting to love, appreciate, and respect myself to challenge that and come through and declare that I wanted to be a model at this age and move forward and do it and not let societal pressure tell me that I shouldn't, not get in my own head about what it means to be a model, constantly having to prove I'm not dumb, things like that. So that's what I mean by it's kind of like a winding journey, but I'm here and I love where I'm at now.
There are so many threads in what you just said that I think we're going to be pursuing. There's the cannabis thread, there's the rule breaking thread, there's the visibility thread, there's all of this. But where I want to start is actually a very foundational question that I am very curious about. What makes a good party?
Oh, yes. That's a great question. It really is the atmosphere that you create. So how you feel about the party comes through in the party. I'm constantly thinking of how the ethos of something creates the structure of something and how you can't divorce it. And so that's why I have my co-founder and I are very clear on the parties we'll take on and create and the parties we won't. We use the, am I allowed to curse?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. We use the fuck yes or no method. Have you heard of that? Yeah. Oh. So use the fuck yes or no method. And if the party doesn't excite us, if we're coming up with it, we're just like, maybe it has to be something that if I hear about it, I'm like, oh, I got to go. I don't care how much the ticket price is. Like, that's something I want to be at. Yep. So what makes a good party is the event producer feeling and falling in love with their event first off, because I think that sets the bar. And then it always comes down to who you invite, the people. Some of my favorite parties have been so hodgepodge, but the people have been enthused about being there. I do not like what I call LA parties, where everyone's just so cool and too cool to have a good time.
Oh, yes.
That's what used to drive me crazy about going to LA parties. Is I'm going to go home. I'm just going to go get pizza and go home. I hate that feeling of like, I can't just be alive and have fun. Like, parties are supposed to be celebratory. You're supposed to be like living your best life. So if you can't do that at a party, why are you even there? So really inviting the right kind of people. And I say that with an asterisk because I feel like so often the right type of people feel are influencers or famous, you know, this, that, and the other. And I feel like those are the wrong type of people 9 times out of 10 because they're just, like I said, they're too cool to have fun. But when you invite just like a really eclectic group together, I find it's usually the best time. So I'd say that goes into making a party fun. Alcohol and or cannabis and or food, those are really important parts. You want to make sure people feel satisfied in what they're doing, whether they, I don't really drink a lot. So for me, it's always making sure cannabis is available, obviously, at our cannabis parties. And we actually abstain from having a lot of alcohol at our parties because the focus is cannabis. But food is always important. People skimp out on the food, but typically if you go to a party and you find me there, I will be near the alcohol and or cannabis and or food. I will be somewhere sandwiched in between. That's what makes a party really great. And then great music. You have to have really great music that makes people want to dance or mingle or just have fun. And venue and setting is always important, you know?
Yeah. Do you have a favorite get the party going song? I'm curious.
So I am a classic Libra in that if I weren't doing all of this, I would be somehow in the music industry, like as a music supervisor. I have a playlist for everything, literally. You know that meme that you need a playlist before you brush your teeth? That's me. Like, I play music all the time when I'm doing anything. So that's, yeah, great. There's like multitude of playlists to get it started depending on what the theme or the vibe is.
Oh my goodness, that's fun.
Love that. For me, music, I kind of took a hiatus from music, not intentionally, but just in this audiobook listening to podcasts. And lately I've been rediscovering how much music influences what the world even feels like, and have really enjoyed discovering both old things and I'm not going to say listening to new music, because for me, new music feels like after 2010.
Yeah. Oh, I want to pull on just a wee moment of that beautiful explanation of parties that I heard, which was you doing the voice of the LA party goer. Because here's what you did. You were like, whatever. I don't know. And that, what you demonstrated, is vocal fry. And yeah, that is so, it's so interesting, because I think that we, Julie and I, have lots and lots of opinions about vocal fry and how the world talks about it, and how particularly, frankly, everyone has a certain amount of vocal fry, but we only really notice it and find it annoying in women. But the thing that I want to connect here is the disengagement and the vocal fry, because so often vocal fry comes from a lack of breath support. And when you kind of have that energy of, oh, I'm not really participating in the world, like I'm just kind of whatever, it's all very contained in me. I'm not going to put any energy outward, because that would mean that I'm actually risking something. Like we risk something when we put our presence into the room. And so that like cool detachment or whatever, it's everywhere in the world right now, I feel.
But it's like psychologically fascinating to me. Like psych was actually, so little known fact, I wanted to work for the CIA, which is what I originally went to school for. I wanted to be a field agent, basically, and be a criminal profiler. So the psychology behind that, like lack of exertion, lack of risk of putting yourself out there, not wanting to be vulnerable, is so interesting to me that it translates as certain body movements or lack thereof, certain vocal formations or lack thereof. But that also I felt was very much the vibe in LA. Like everyone was terrified of being vulnerable and then therefore being seen as not cool enough, because LA is built so much around social circles. And if you're cool enough to be invited XYZ or get in ABC. So it all kind of ties together in my opinion, which is really interesting.
Julie, I want to let you jump in here.
I am struck by how many overlaps there are between modeling and CIA stuff. Like you really have to be able to seamlessly fit into mise en scène and be a part of that. Be both additive and also not take anyone out of the world. So I see a lot of overlaps.
You're the only person who's like connected that to, and I thank you for that. Because so many people are like, what? They have nothing to do with each other. I'm like, it's all acting if you think about it.
Yeah.
Like it's showing up and putting on a different personality. Yes, absolutely. So I watched all the spy shows, everything.
But as far as a question goes, I want to steer a little bit, even though we would talk for hours and hours if we could, I want to make sure I get to ask some questions. And I wanted to just ask a very basic question about the cannabis industry.
Yeah.
Of what, for some people, it's kind of coming as a surprise. Why is this suddenly everywhere? And it's got a lot of nuances and a lot of things that are directly impacting a lot of social issues and a lot of issues involving equality and access and all of those things. So I would love, in whatever capacity you feel drawn to, just to, what the heck is the cannabis industry? What's going on? What's
the cannabis state of the union?
Decided by June Johnson.
Yes, please.
Just from my personal experience, I grew up in a marijuana positive. My mom's like an old school hippie. So age appropriate, I was let known by her, like, cannabis can be great. It can be wonderful. So in high school, college, I experimented with cannabis and it was like, oh, cool. This gets me high, whatever. I don't really care about it. And then I partook in it here and there, but nothing really significant. And then in 2018, my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin lymphoma. We found out because her femur broke because of the tumor. And it was really significant. It was a really terrifying time. And we were in San Francisco at the time, which I'm really thankful for this specific reason, because it's so understood that cannabis has a place in health, more so than if we had been in Georgia or something like that. Seeing how it saved my mom's life from the incredible amount of pain she was in, her appetite, she dropped down to like 106 pounds, which was terrifying. It just gave me an entirely new respect for this plant. Like beyond this gets you high, this doesn't, this can be healing and healthy. And I think that that's what's happening in a larger part of the world, is a lot of people are finding out maybe Western medicine can't do all these things, that they're coming up short in certain areas, especially like holistic health. It doesn't really identify that as like a necessary component for wellness. And I think a lot of people are turning to alternatives once they reach the end of their, like, I've tried this, I've done that, what do I do? And that's partly why we started Collective High, because we wanted people to reach for cannabis first instead of last. You go through so much more pain when you think that you can't have that or shouldn't access it. When you come to find out, most of the reason why we feel so negative towards cannabis has really just been a racist campaign of propaganda. So I think what's happening is we're in an interesting time. I could break down the astrological part of it, but I'll just keep it short for this. I think we're in an interesting time where a lot of things that were just codified as normal are being undone. We're really starting to connect with ancient remedies. We're starting to realize, again, racist propaganda that's kept us hidden from modalities that my ancestors came to know and love and do. And so now it's kind of reclaiming that and coming back into that. So I think part of it is just like the time, which is people are seeking alternative routes, especially since drug prices are so high. Yeah. Senators just kicked off voting for $35 insulin. So it's like you have people who are really struggling financially. And so when you do that, you typically try to find alternatives. Mm-hmm. Cannabis is a lot cheaper. And once you try it, depending on what your experience is and depending on what your body needs are, if you find out, wow, I can get this for like X amount of money and this helps me, and maybe it even gives me peace and reduces my anxiety and helps me be more creative and gives me an appetite versus this other thing, this pill that I'm maybe going to have to take and then take three other pills to counteract the side effects that I have. It just kind of goes, yeah, and goes like that. So I think that's part of the combination. I also think there are groups of people that have traditionally not had access to platforms and speaking their truth that are now finally being heard. You have a lot of people incarcerated who built this industry who are still sitting in prison, mm-hmm, while predominantly white people come into the space and make money. It's actually, that was a Forbes article. It was like the last straw at the company that I was previously working at and why I quit, because the title of that Forbes article was "Legal Delivery Companies Thrive Amid Pandemic by Co-opting Illicit Markets Blueprint." Ooh, and whoo, my bosses did not see anything wrong with being mentioned and highlighted in that article. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Like, co-opting is literally in the title. Like, what? So you have a lot of reconciliation that needs to take place. You have a lot of truth that still needs to be unearthed. So I think that's why the social issues are getting pushed in with the wellness issues, because it's all one and the same if you really think about it. And so you just have this like energy around all of this stuff coming up and erupting right now. And it's time.
100%. Sorry, Casey, go ahead.
There's so much in this. As someone who, I'm going to admit it right now, I have never tried cannabis. I grew up in a relatively conservative household and quite conservative when it came to drugs and alcohol. Nobody in my household drank. Like, I grew up Southern Baptist, but I also, gotcha, grew up at the height of the DARE era.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny. I just saw a tweet the other day that made me laugh so hard, that was showing a picture of the pencils that they used to pass out at the DARE program. And the pencils said, "It's not cool to do drugs, but as you sharpened them, it became cool to do drugs." And then it was, "Do drugs." As you kept sharpening them. I'm really interested in how you would approach a conversation with someone who grew up with a big stigma around, yeah, marijuana use, and explaining like the benefits of it to them.
Yeah. So those are my favorite conversations, to be honest. Like, I love working with hard or difficult material. Most of it just comes down to education. That's, yeah, why, you know, we center education around it. I would run through the brief history of why it came to be this way. Before 100, there were zero laws on the books about marijuana because everyone was using it in some form or the other. You had hemp, which had been around since 10,000 BC. Hemp was in our clothing, it was in candles. It was just widely known. You also have to understand that prior to 1920, like, Coca-Cola had actual cocaine in it. So, like, yep, you were being prescribed all kinds of things and no one looked the other way, or everyone looked the other way, excuse me. So what happened, right? So 1910, we have the Mexican Revolution. And we start getting immigration from Mexico.
Mm.
What happens at that? Kind of similar to now. We have people who are using dog whistle terms of, we have this immigrants coming through. They're sending their worst people. Literally, rinse, wash, repeat of what we just experienced with Trump. So there's a whole campaign against Mexican immigrants. And rather than call, also at this time, you have to understand there's two people who played a significant part. There's Henry Anslinger, and then there's also Hearst, John Hearst, Hearst Media Publications.
Yes, of course.
So you have to realize Hearst bought a ton of land to chop down trees and make his newspapers. So hemp threatened that significantly because hemp was cheaper. It was a better alternative. It was more economical and was more environmental friendly. So he's like, that's got to go. So he used his newspapers to crusade against hemp, but you couldn't call it hemp because we'd been using that for 10,000 BC. So you can't just get people to hate what they've been using. So what could he do to make the whole thing bad? They started calling it marijuana because that was the Mexican term for cannabis. So not by saying, oh, Mexicans are bad, but marijuana, this thing that they're bringing in is that same thing. So you had that going on, and he used his entire newspaper out to be able to push this out nonstop. And we know with repetitive media, you start to buy it. The public starts to believe it. So that's happening. And then at the same time, you have Harry Anslinger, who is the basically grandfather of the carceral state that we have today. But he got his start. He was the one who pushed for Reefer Madness. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie.
I have seen the poster. I've never seen the movie, no.
It's wild. They made us watch it in eighth grade. And literally all of us left to go smoke. We were like, this is so stupid. This had the opposite effect. Bye. And we skipped and we smoked. And the second day we came high to the class to watch it. And it's like the funniest movie if you're high. But so that was like the same time that they were just like advocating that jazz musicians are bringing this in. The Mexicans and the Blacks are commingling and making it. Harry Anslinger is literally quoted as saying, marijuana makes the darkies feel like they're equivalent to white men. It like there was the whole like stereotyping of white women will be attacked and of everything course. Because they'll think, you know, like all of the things, right? So the two of them basically tag team to make marijuana a really dangerous thing, perceived as dangerous. If you've watched the movie The United States versus Billie Holiday, you'll see Anslinger and how determined he was to put Black musicians in prison for speaking about racism and, among other things, doing marijuana. So I would explain to them the history of that, because that's really important to know that until the 30s, we didn't really have any laws. And then what happened, the reason why marijuana exploded on the scene is because of prohibition. People couldn't drink, so they're going to turn to marijuana. So you had all of this happening at one time, and then laws were put on the books that made it so if you got busted with the smallest amount of marijuana, you'd go potentially for life.
Wow.
So it flipped from having nothing to suddenly being demonized. That was in play until the 60s. And then that's when you get like counter. Suddenly when you had like pretty well-to-do white kids who were college bound or at school also having fun with marijuana, that's when you started seeing the laws pulled back. You started seeing more leniency, but only for white children. Black people, Hispanic people are still getting locked up at twice the rate, even though usage is the same across everyone. And so you start seeing how this has been completely arranged by racism. And if you know that much, then that should at least kind of peek or give you like a peek behind the curtain to start examining some of the other things you've heard about it.
Yeah.
And from there, I like to explain cannabis isn't for everyone. Not everyone should do cannabis. If you really feel against it, then don't do it because you won't enjoy your experience and you'll feel guilty for doing it. And there's no point in that.
Yeah.
But almost everyone can benefit from cannabis. There are some people who don't, but basically what it does is it brings homeostasis to your endocannabinoid system. And that's what they're discovering is each of these cannabinoids can affect a specific part of your endocannabinoid system. And that's why cannabis does what it does. There's also hundreds of cannabinoids. Like everyone's familiar with THC. They're starting to become familiar with CBD, but there's CBG, which is great for calming. There's THCV, which is great as a stimulant, also acts as an appetite suppressant. There's all these different cannabinoids, CBN, which is specifically great for sleep, but doesn't get you high. And so how that starts to affect our body is it creates this, like I said, homeostasis. So for some people, if they don't want to feel like the heady high, then that's when I would talk them through, like maybe try some CBD, which can just help with anxiety and something to calm down. There's basically a cannabinoid for everyone if people are inclined to try it. And so based on their level of comfort, I would walk them through where I would suggest them starting. Maybe it's something for sleep. Maybe it's a topical for pain. There's just different ways to engage, but I don't ever try to force anyone into trying cannabis because if it's not for them, it's not for them. But I love those questions because I explain the history and then I explain how there's a different cannabinoid for everything. It is medical now, and medicinal is recreational, in my opinion, and recreational is medicinal. So it just depends on what they are needing or wanting to know from that.
I feel like I want to give you a standing ovation for that. That was incredible. Mm-hmm. I just learned so much. Also, I feel like I want you to be the person that I try cannabis with. Like,
yes.
Putting that stake in the ground right now. I want to hang out with you and I want you to introduce me to this. I'm very into it. Armoire is a designer women's clothing rental service that's all about helping you look and feel great while saving you time and money. And you get to experiment with new fun styles like I think a lot of us are wanting to do right now.
With Armoire, you can rent high-end clothing at a fraction of the cost. Plus, no more stressing about dry cleaning. They do the cleaning for you, which is great because dry cleaning is one of those things that just does not get done over here. With the most popular designer brands and emerging woman-owned brands, they have something for every clothing need, from workwear to eventwear and beyond. Rent 4, 6, 7 pieces at a time and swap them when you're ready for something new. When you sign up, their algorithm uses your preferences to create a personalized closet. It's like having an unlimited closet and a personal stylist at your fingertips. And speaking of stylists, every membership comes with free access to human stylists too.
Yep, Armoire is giving our listeners 50% off of your first month plus an extra item. That's your first month of any monthly plan, 4 items, 7 items, or unlimited for $40, $60, or $125. Become an Armoire member today. Go to armoire.style/voiceis to get 50% off of your first month of clothing rental from Armoire. That's armoire.style/voiceis. Put voice is in the referral box for the best discount. Never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
I love cannabis introduction parties. That's what some of our events are really like. We did an event last year called Vibe Check, where it was in this beautiful 3-story house in San Francisco. And we had a woman who is just so knowledgeable about this. She has a PhD. And so we were trying to habituate people to checking in with themselves and how they feel before they partake in anything. Because I feel like that's often a very missed thing that people do that really connects it all together. As guests checked in, they would speak with her and she'd say like, how are you feeling today? What's your mood? What are you trying to do? Just really ask them questions about where their state of mind is. And then based on what they wanted, she would guide them to an activation within this 3-story house that would kind of address that. So if they're like, I'm feeling a little sad and I just want to create something and just kind of mellow out, then she guided them to this like activities section where they can make this beautiful like bath and whatever soak by Green Bee Botanicals. And just kind of really making people understand here's how cannabis can specifically affect you. Here's how you can use cannabis to get to where you want to be, but always check in with yourself. So we do events like that, but we always create like safe spaces so people don't feel like they have to partake in order to be at our events.
I love that. And I want to go to one.
Yes.
I'm in San Francisco. It's also, as you're giving the history, I finally put something together, which is we had prohibition, but then in World War II, alcohol became like a patriotic thing to do, and it was given to soldiers, and it was like cigarettes and it had a complete rebranding that happened around then. And it feels like there's an overlap between the golden days of cannabis and then when alcohol came back on the market and decided to reclaim its territory.
Yeah. And also you have to realize that like after World War One, the equipment that was used in World War One was really terrifying to so many of the soldiers. I don't know if you've ever watched Peaky Blinders, but it's really fascinating to me. You would have these women who would be paid to sing in bars because men would just start losing their shit and going in PTSD, like in the middle of a bar, starting to fight. So they found that a woman singing calmed everyone down and got them at least to break up fights, which is really wild and interesting. So I think what happened is after World War One, you had people just losing it, as war tends to do when it's not being heightened as this amazing thing. And so what does alcohol do? It gets you to numb out your pains. It gets you to drink and not think about it. So yeah, I'm not surprised that alcohol was then reintroduced and pushed. It's the same thing they did during slavery. In order to reduce the amount of slaves who would try to run away, on the weekends, they would pour alcohol out. They would just
really?
Yeah, inundate the slaves with alcohol so that they wouldn't try to run away. They'd be too drunk. They'd this, that, and the other. That's what like the whole weekend warrior type of energy comes from. So to me, it's a rebranding, but it's also like anytime that this government is like pushing alcohol, it's because they want people to typically be like numb and just not motivated to really sit with where they're at and be like, does this work for me? Is this okay? I'm not okay. So yeah, that makes sense to me time-wise.
I agree with everything you just said. And wow, we're going to have much more than this hour of conversation to have.
Yes.
Oh, I want to pull on this thread of being present in your body, both as you were discussing it with cannabis usage, but also kind of to take it back to the modeling industry. I would love to, I said kind of an embarrassing thing to you. I think it was the first thing that I ever said to you when we were at that lunch and I met you for the first time. We were going around the table introducing ourselves and you introduced yourself as a model and you had ordered a burger. And for some reason, I was like, a model eating a burger. And I said the stupid, embarrassing thing of, I'm so glad that like, I'm watching a model eat a burger, which I feel like is a cliche. I feel like that's a media cliche, particularly like when the Rolling Stone is interviewing like the hot young starlet, they're like, and there she was eating her burger and French fries because that makes her normal and accessible. But I would love to hear about how you throughout this career in this parallel career in modeling and cannabis, how you keep in touch with your own body, how you keep present in your body, and like maybe what the challenges have been around that for you.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. Because it's taken a lot of work to get to where I'm at. I will not even pretend like it hasn't. Even so much as like I'm a double air sign in my big three. So I'm always in my head. So it's taken a lot of meditation and just different things to really ground me throughout the day and make me be present and not future forward. But one of the interesting things is when I was younger, I did struggle with eating and there was a lot of pressure put on me through my dad of just what I looked like and to be perfect. And so it developed and it turned into an eating disorder. And then I stopped that for a long time. But, you know, there's remnants of that in your head every time I want to go eat or if I feel like I'm eating too much and stuff like that. So I have done a world of work on really loving and approving of myself as is, not in this, I'm going to be worth my own love when I get to this, that, or the, I'm just like really just being like, no, here and now I love myself. So ground floor. But what I have really worked on is really listening to my body. And that's through everything. That's listening to my gut in situations and with friends, with business, even just so much as leave the house today and do this at this time, you know, just really listening to my gut. And once I start listening to my gut and my heart, it starts making being in tune with my body just so much easier. And so what's interesting, especially like as it relates to modeling, is there is so much pressure to be thin. There still is. We're seeing changes in the industry, not fast enough, obviously, in my opinion, but we are seeing some changes. But, you know, you still have, it's the modeling industry. I'm not going to lie and pretend, oh, it's moving in this great direction. Like, it's still really fucked up in parts. And so getting to a place where I feel comfortable with whatever I'm eating and just knowing that I work out, I eat clean because that's what works for my body. Like I'm a blood A type. So I started really paying attention to what makes my body feel good when I eat it. What doesn't? Because part of not listening to myself is I could eat something, my stomach would be having a reaction and I would just kind of ignore it. And so now it's like, oh, if my body's having a reaction, is it telling me it likes what I just ate or it doesn't like what I just ate and then eat accordingly. So it's been transitioning through all of that and realizing my body loves fruits and veggies. Like just, that's what I need to supply it with on the daily. But it's also like, if you look in my kitchen, I have Boom Chicka popcorn that I was eating last night after my workout. Like I'm not going to restrict me because I did that before and it made me hate myself. And when I don't restrict myself, it allows me to love myself and just be honest with myself. Like, okay, if I overindulge here, then I'm going to work out a little bit harder or I'm going to eat cleaner tomorrow. And to be cognizant of, it is a job. Modeling, like acting is one of those jobs where it is based on how you look. You are the product.
Both of us have been there and done that. Yes.
Exactly. You are the product. And that can get really hurtful with rejection, because unlike the software that you're selling, it's you. So if they don't want you, you are the product and stuff like that. So just getting into a really healthy place of kind of disassociating from the negative aspects of modeling while still making sure that I take care of myself and I have fun. Like, I feel I look my best when I'm happiest, however that may be. And I've noticed that the happier I am, and like when I like have some popcorn or eat a burger or donuts, as long as I'm really enjoying it at the time, I don't overindulge. And I just feel like I look better. The times where I've been really restricted, I didn't look good. You could see it in my face. You could see it in my eyes. And so it's really just keeping all that in mind. And one of the biggest people to help me out with that was actually Coco Rocha. I went to her model camp last year, and she's exquisite. She eats. And I thought I was going to go pull up there. It's like the X-Men school of modeling. And I thought I was just going to be like served, like coconut water and like 3 almonds a day or something. And we're getting tacos and burgers and pasta. And I'm like, what? What is going on? And her whole thing is, she's like, I want you all to eat. Like, modeling is so energetic that if you don't have fuel, you're not going to be a good model. No one wants you to see you fainting after 30 minutes of shooting. So it's like, you've got to have that fuel. So I feel like there's more people in the business now who know how to do things healthy. And that's kind of where we're seeing some of the change. And so that makes me happy to be known as the model who eats a burger or donuts or whatever, and not have it be such a weird thing after all, because people still identify it as weird. I remember seeing someone come after Coco. She was like, the best cure for jet lag is pasta for her, which is true. I've seen her eat pasta. And people in the comments were like, you don't do that. Don't lie. I'm just like, she really does though. And she's encouraged so many other models to do it too. Changing of the guards.
So with both modeling in the industry and cannabis in the industry, they're obviously different things, but I'm curious for you, now that we've established that there are threads that are connecting these disparate things, like, what's the big dream for you?
Oh my gosh, I love that. Weirdly enough, one of my favorite movies is Zoolander.
Classic. And it's a classic.
Right. And I saw that and I was like, you know what? I'm inspired. I'm actually going to do that. But for real, like, his whole thing, he had a very beautiful line in there, or a beautiful point rather, that models have access to some of the most powerful people in the world. So I come from a very political family, a Southern political family, and I did not want to go into politics, but I really care about politics and activism and stuff like that. So I was like, what if I just fast track and use modeling to get access to these very important people and then use my platform to just have open discussions with them? I'm a smart being, so I feel like that would go a lot further than me trying to go through the route of politics. And that honestly was like how I started to kind of inform what I wanted to do, to drop out of the CIA, to start modeling, to do all these other things. And I was like, yeah, I could just not do the political route and really just have access and then use my platform as an advocate for cannabis, as an advocate for women's rights, as an advocate for the Black community, to really push out my platform and have it all kind of come together. So my dream is exactly what I'm doing. It's continuing to model, to use that platform to gain influence, and then to use that influence to be an advocate for the communities that I love and support. So that's kind of how the big picture ties in together for me through Zoolander. Outline.
I love it so much.
Yeah, no one would believe it if I just say off the bat, but it makes sense when I explain it.
It makes perfect sense. Yes. Oh my gosh, Julie, I like, oh, there are so many directions we could go, but
I think this is actually a good segue to a question that we had. And you mentioned the word platform. We of course always stalk our guests before you show up.
Just some gentle social media stalking.
I love some me stalking. I do it all the time.
Yep.
And we noticed in 2021, you decided to step off Instagram.
Yeah.
And I'd be curious about that. When we're talking about access and visibility and all of that, what that was like for you, aside from just the happiness factor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to know.
It was a decision that was like years long, because I just really was not loving Instagram, but I felt that I couldn't not be on it as a model, because that's where you post basically your portfolio now. And also I was getting lots of like fashion sponsorship and beauty sponsorship, things being sent to me, getting paid to do all this stuff. And it's always through Instagram. This is like before TikTok was around, but it wasn't like, it was like Musical.ly at the time or something. So it wasn't really a viable thing. And I wasn't doing YouTube, but I started getting shadow banned on Instagram because I was speaking so openly about anti-racism. And I think because my account was so fashion steep that I'm suddenly switching it and talking about anti-racism, it just killed my numbers. And then I actively was shadow banned. Like, I have proof on my highlights where they would take away 4,000 followers and drop it in, then take it away, then drop it in. So my account was being like heavily messed with. And I was like, why am I freaking out about Mark Zuckerberg's app? This is beneath me at this point. Like, I really just started getting so frustrated. It was like a combination of that. And then also, like, when my mom did get sick, I got to realize a lot of friends that I thought were friends weren't friends. It was just convenience through Instagram. Mm. And so I was like, let me cut off this fake access. Let me cut off this thing that's not supporting me, that's actually doing harm, that's bringing me stress. What is the point? I will keep in touch with the people I'm meant to keep in touch with. And those who can only keep in touch through Instagram, like, I'm willing to let them go at this point. And so, yeah, I jumped off and it felt really freeing. I downloaded a VPN app. And so that's kind of what helped me break away from it. And then I realized after a week of like really not being on, I'm like, I don't miss this. Like, I don't miss yelling into the void of Instagram stories. And I don't miss like checking how many likes I got and how many comments and stuff like that. And so it felt really nice to step away. The negative part is I did lose people who are just not willing to communicate outside of Instagram, which is really shocking to me. Like, good friends that I was like, really? Like, we can only have a friendship if it's going to be through Instagram. So there was some negative aspect to it too, but negative only in the way of, oh, I didn't realize that this is the reality of what the situation was. But now that I do, I can move accordingly. But it's been really nice not being on Instagram, I'm not going to lie. There's on my vision board, there's this cutout that I found in an article, and I feel like it describes me really well, which is, you know me and you don't. And I feel like Instagram and so much of social media has made it appear as if we know all these people that we just really don't, and made it appear as if we should have access to people in all corners of their lives that we really shouldn't and don't. And so this breakaway from Instagram felt like a very mindful step to kind of create that barrier that I was missing and giving myself some privacy.
Yeah.
I love that, bringing back privacy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an issue privacy on so many levels.
Boundaries.
Yeah, but even just this, yeah, boundaries. Yeah, yeah. And that it's not, we approach this when we're talking to clients about vulnerability, that the idea or the impression seems to be that if you are going to step into vulnerable territory, that means you have to rip your guts out and bleed on stage.
Yeah.
Because that's what social media has made us believe.
Yeah.
Give us all of your, so we can judge it.
So we can judge it and commodify it where possible, so that we can have you buying things, so that we can support this wheel of capitalism.
But let's also make sure that your vulnerability is beautiful. It's the single tier style of vulnerability.
Curated vulnerability.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Although it's funny because it's like, I know people are searching for outside of that. There's one picture I put up on my Instagram. This was 2018 because I took it outside of Zuckerberg Hospital. My mom and I had gotten in a fight that day. It was like on the way to one of her hospital visits, and it was just a nasty day. I was also like PMSing. So it was like, and I took a picture of myself ugly crying because it's like, fuck this like pretty one tier shit. But basically, I just want to show, today's not a good day. It's okay to have bad days. Like, not everything's going to be perfect. And we try so hard to curate this look of perfection. And we just know that's not even like the real deal behind it. So why are we trying to do this? Why are we killing ourselves to try to make it seem like our life is perfect when it's not? And that actually got the most reaction, I think, out of like most of the modeling pictures I've done too, is people just like really vibing with that and being like, oh, thank you for being honest, and like just stating that. And I didn't even do it to get a reaction. It was more just like, I'm not perfect and I'm tired of trying to pretend that I have a perfect life, because I really don't. I am ugly crying outside of Zuckerberg. Yeah. And then another picture, there was a picture in Italy. It's like smoke and mirrors, because my friend and I are lying on like the netting of the boat. We stayed on a boat for a week. And
that
it looks
fabulous.
That was the whole point of this picture, because oh my god. The first time I did it was in Croatia, and it was great. It was like challenging in that you're on a boat with other people, but it was fine. And then when we went to Italy, we got like a nicer boat. So it was like, oh my God, so fancy. Look at me in Positano. I got food poisoning before we even left. So like, as we're pulling off, I'm like, oh, I don't feel so good, y'all. I'm going to go downstairs. Worst mistake, because as soon as you lose eyesight, you get worse. And so 20 minutes later, my friend comes down. He's like, open the door. I was like, no. I'm like on the bathroom floor of the boat, just get out. So I open the door. He looks at me and goes, he literally recoiled and gasped. He goes, oh no. And I'm like, is it that bad? He's like, you're gray right now on the face. So like that kicked off the trip. So like the whole trip, I was somehow just like sick. The water's really choppy because even the captain got sick at one point. So I would wake up, I'd throw up. I'd try to eat a lunch, I'd throw up. It was just like nonstop. And I was like, but I'm trying to be so grateful to be here because I'm in Italy, but I feel like crap. But I was trying to be grateful. Like toxic, like positivity. Instead of just being like, wow, I thought this was going to go a little different. But at one point, my friend and I are both on the netting because she was starting to get sick too, just like throwing up. And my one friend walked past us. She goes, wait, you both look hot. Throw up your leg or something. And so she gets this picture. And I put it on there. I put it on my Instagram twice. The first one was like, cheers from Italy. And then we were like, oh my God, we live the life. And then I reposted it. And I was like, just so you know, behind the scenes, this was the only part of the boat that we could easily throw up on that wouldn't require cleanup because it was on the netting. Like, this is Instagram versus reality. And this is what people do. They make it seem like it's going this way when this is happening in the background. So please don't adjust your life to what you're seeing on Instagram, because I assure you, this day felt like crap. I look hot. My friend looks hot, but we were dying. So,
God.
I will never stay on a boat again for a week. I won't do it. I'll do a day trip, maybe a night trip, or it's got to be like a yacht, not to sound fancy, but like it's got to be much bigger.
It needs to be bigger. That's the point.
Rockiness.
You need like the grandpa car version of the boat.
Yes.
Literally. There's nothing more embarrassing. When we pulled into our first little port, I was like hanging on the thing, just throwing up as we pulled in. God. I'm like, what the hell?
That sucks. Oh my God.
Yeah.
We've been talking about perception. We've been talking about changing hearts and minds and all of this stuff. And you brought up Anne Hathaway. I want you to tell us a little bit more about this in some context.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't remember when it was, because I loved Princess Diaries. I had no issue with Hathaway back then. It was like, maybe probably heard some rumor of, oh, she's maybe difficult to work with or something like that. But I just remember all of a sudden just really not liking her movies. Just something about her, I told myself that was like annoying and that I didn't like, and that I could never put my finger on it.
Yeah. Which
probably should have been my red flag of worthy of examining. But what is it? Because if you can't put your finger on it, then do tell. But there was just something about her I didn't like, and that got on my nerves. And I thought that was like justifiable for not liking her. And there was some article about Hathahate. That's what they labeled it. Hathahate. Uh-huh. And the pile on of just hating Anne Hathaway and why it's rooted in sexism and misogyny. And I read the article. I don't remember where it was, maybe like the Atlantic or the Cut. And it was brilliant. And it was like, I feel attacked, but like I needed to feel attacked on this. There is truth to this. Cause yeah, there was no reason why I didn't like her. Her work and her production was great. It wasn't like, and there's definitely been other people who've done awful things who I like gave a pass to. So why was this so focused on her? So it was a really interesting like flashlight on some shadowy behaviors I was also participating in that helped support patriarchy.
I feel like some of it came down to visible effort. People were like slightly turned off by, or not just slightly turned off, quite turned off by what they saw as being too ambitious or too visibly striving, and how that, and I'm really interested in that. We just wrote our newsletter for today, which is about to go out, about Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah.
And we were talking about her. One of my favorite pop culture commentators was talking about the song Hopelessly Devoted to You and how everybody thinks they can sing that song until they get to the bridge and it starts to go high. And they're like, oh, she made it look really easy. Yeah. And it's actually not really easy. So I think we've got that demand on women the make it look easy, but then you can dismiss them because mm-hmm. it looks so easy. But then when we get the visible effort, the punishment that you get for that visible effort, I find really interesting.
Absolutely. It's kind of what we were talking before. Like my dislike of LA parties was that lack of effort, right? So then why do we demonize it when we see it, especially in women? Because it's like, we want women to be just like very much within this specific box that we outline. You can do this, but not that. You can do that, but not this. And we just want you to stay right in this little target. And if you move outside of it, then you're a problem. And it's all issues of control, obviously. But yeah, we really do demonize women who are ambitious and strive. And like, we love to build them up and then tear them down. And it's really interesting who gets a pass to be ambitious and who doesn't, and for what reasons and when and why. And yeah, it's really fascinating to me. Mm.
Julie, do we need to get to the big five now? I could we could talk to you all day. Really? Oh my gosh.
I know, we need round two.
We're going to continue this conversation. However, so we ask the same five questions of all of our podcast guests. And the first one starts pretty easy. Do you consider yourself to be an introvert or an extrovert?
I am a former introvert who's now an extrovert. There's this quote by Ingrid Bergman that I just fell in love with. I felt so seen when the first time I saw it, and it goes something like, I was the shyest human that ever existed, but I had a lion inside of me that would not shut up. I might be paraphrasing it, but I think that's basically it. But that is so me, because I used to be the most like shy person ever. And it just like the inner me just would not, most authentic self would not shut up. I think a lot of it was compounded in like childhood of being made to be seen and heard a certain way. And the inner most authentic me is a very loud person. And so it's honoring that as I go more and more towards extrovert.
Mm. Love that. Second question, what is your definition of power?
Living with no fear. I'd say living with no fear and being your most authentic self and loving who you are as your most authentic self. Mm. Like really showing up and feeling comfortable and confident you are is just a sense of power that I feel like that's why when we see people who are seemingly that way, we're just in awe of them. We say it's charisma, but I think it's really just a form of being their most authentic self and being comfortable with that. Mm. And that's powerful to me.
Yeah. What is your definition of play?
Say also gratification through joy, taking time to be in childlike wonder and curiosity. I'd say all of those are play for me, or what play symbolizes for me.
I'm going to ask a bonus question. How do you play?
Ooh, for me, part of how I play, I love being in front of the lens, but I also love being behind the lens and taking pictures. So that's part of my play. And it can be with people, with buildings, like architecture and stuff like that. Part of my play is indulging in things that feel luxurious to my soul. So whether that's getting a mani-pedi or massage or sleeping in bed or deciding not to work one day and just like reading all day, like all of that is a form of play. Whatever gets me excited and gets me feeling like giddy, I use that as my North Star for play.
This, I'm very curious. What's your definition of authenticity?
It's funny when you asked the earlier question of like, am I an introvert or extrovert? I feel like so many people have put me in a box. And I feel like a lot of times I'm just a very observant person. And so a lot of times people mistake my quietness for shyness when really I just like to, that CIA thing. I really just like to know who I'm talking with and what's going on. Helps process my feelings and inform my choices. But I think my whole thing is don't put me in a box. I won't be there for very long. And so being able to have the courage to be yourself, to show up as yourself, to really be proud of who you are and love who you are. Like, honesty is, whether it's a person or a brand, just presenting in their most truthful self. That's authentic or authenticity.
Love it. And the last question, tell us about a time that you really trusted your own voice.
I will tell you about the most recent time, actually. It was right after Roe v. Wade was overturned. And I went to Washington Square Park, which was my first time going. It's a wild time anytime you go. But especially...
was probably there at the same time as you, actually. Yep.
Amazing. Yes. I left like a business meeting. I was like, I got to go protest. And so I went, I hitchhiked it over there. And the crowd was huge. This was like 6:30 in the evening. And I mentioned before, I come from very political family. I come from a long line of orators who love doing speeches and that lion in me that won't shut up. And there's two people with a bullhorn and they were encouraging people to come up and speak their truth and say things. And I could just feel it. I was like, oh, it's coming. It's, I got to say something here. And so I did. And I stood up on like the side of the fountain and I realized there's so many people here, so much more than I'm like just standing. But I used the bullhorn. I wasn't even sure what I was going to say, but I just felt the need to speak from the heart. And so I opened up with an Audre Lorde quote, which is, the master's tools will never dissemble the master's house. I opened with that. And it really just was a reclamation of, you know, a lot of the conversations I'd been hearing in different circles that I had. They really didn't address that, the fact that there's been so many Black and brown women who've been experiencing everything that now is suddenly, I feel, very new to white women experiencing around this. And so my quote was like, expecting this government to do right by us is the master's tools assembling the master's house. Like, it's not going to do that. They have need to change. It's working fine for them. So don't rely on the system that created all this, that allowed it to happen, and thinking that it's going to be the one to save us. We, the people, have to save us. Like, it is entirely and always ever up to the people. And people forget that their power lies in community and unity. So just calling for people to come together to realize we can determine this. Let's not ask the government for anything. Let's be the mobilized force that really brings power back to the people. And then also just recognizing that, like, a lot of the talk I hear is the wheel and starts creating like new projects, new organizations, when again, there's lots of Black and brown led organizations that have been doing this work for decades. And to pay attention to them, uplift them, support them, rather than coming in late in the game and like just trying something else that like pulls away from their attention. And then also I addressed mutual aid. If you've got coin, then give it to these organizations. It's the best way you can do something that's proactive and impactful. So I just let it rip, and I hope that people received it. I got a couple comments after and it felt really powerful. And I was like, why don't I speak like this more often? Like, why don't I jump on TikTok? You don't have to have a platform. Anyone is your platform that, you know, that's listening to you. So it was a good reminder to just keep speaking.
That's a beautiful note to wrap up on. One more prompt, which is just tell our audience how to find you and anything that you want to plug right now. This is your space to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. I can be found on Twitter. My name is June Johnson. I can also be found on TikTok, also June Johnson. I'm not on Instagram. And then Collective High can also be found on Instagram through Collective High. And we encourage people to sign up for our newsletter so they can find out information and truth about cannabis and how it could benefit them, but also find out about our events and our parties. And that is kind of it for right now. There's projects that I'm working on that I hope to reveal soon, but they're still cooking in the background. So I'm going to wait to share them, but definitely find me through Twitter, TikTok. I'm always available.
Amazing.
Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh.
This has just been a fantastic conversation.
Yes. I can't wait for people to hear this. Thank you so much, June.
Oh my gosh. Thank you again so much for thinking of me. This has been great.
That was such a fun conversation, and it got me thinking about today's lesson, especially with an upcoming election next week, that we all just need a little bit of gentle, loving self-care, not the kind where you have to go spend some money, but the simplest self-care I know of, which is going to ground, literally laying on the floor. If you saw Ali Wong's Baby Cobra back in 2016, she has a line where she says, I don't want to lean in. I want to lie down. I very much appreciate that. And I want to talk about how to make your lie down in the most effective as possible. So when I say lie down, I'm not kidding. I literally mean laying on the floor. You can lay flat on your back with your legs extended. You can put your knees to the ceiling. My favorite is actually to get a chair to put my lower legs on so I'm in a little bit of a Z shape. I also usually get a book maybe about an inch and a half high so I can have my spine in alignment. And then all you do is lay down. Now, that was such a fun conversation, and it got me thinking about today's lesson, especially with an upcoming election next week, that we all just need a little bit of gentle,
loving self-care, not the kind where you have to go spend some money, but the simplest self-care I know of, which is going to ground, literally laying on the floor. If you saw Ali Wong's Baby Cobra back in 2016, she has a line where she says, "I don't want to lean in. I want to lie down." I very much appreciate that. And I want to talk about how to make your lie down in the most effective as possible. So when I say lie down, I'm not kidding. I literally mean laying on the floor. You can lay flat on your back with your legs extended. You can put your knees to the ceiling. My favorite is actually to get a chair to put my lower legs on so I'm in a little bit of a Z shape. I also usually get a book maybe about an inch and a half high so I can have my spine in alignment. And then all you do is lay down. Now, what is the glory of what happens when you lay down? Well, a few things. If you let yourself stay long enough, and I don't mean like days and days, I mean like 5 minutes, you'll start to actually feel your muscles release into the ground. They will be able to take advantage of that support the ground provides. My dad has a lot of back problems. I've introduced him to this exercise, and he's had really great results. So I can tell when I'm laying on the floor, when it's been long enough, there's just a little something that feels like it settles. It feels like I've suddenly softened my armor that I've been holding up to the world, and I can really take in all that support. And this is without doing anything at all. There's all kinds of variations of this, but this is not a meditation. This is not anything with a goal. This is an opportunity to take just a moment of quiet, of full support for your body, and allow your nervous system to calm down. I hope you enjoy doing this. It's one of my absolute favorites.
Voice is produced and edited by us, Casey Aaron Clark
and Julie Fogg. Our theme song, From This Point On, is from Softkill.
If you'd like to learn more about Vital Voice Training and all the different ways that we work with both individuals and organizations, you can find everything you need to know on our website, vitalvoicetraining.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at @vital_voice and on Instagram at @vitalvoicetraining. If you enjoyed what you heard today, we would love for you to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And remember,
your voice, your body, and your ideas deserve to take up space in the world.